Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Jim Hansen. I'll be your board rep today. Hope you're enjoying this beautiful sunny morning, a little chilly. And we are a welcoming congregation here at LCUUC, so whatever your race, spiritual perspective, ethnicity, physical ability, or sexual orientation, we celebrate your presence among us. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. They're listed in your order of service, and we encourage you to take that order of service home with you today. A couple other announcements are, after the service and coffee, you're invited to the double classroom past the social hall to meet with today's minister, Reverend Linda Hansen of Maguanago, and bring any questions you might have or comments about their obtaining a new church in Waukesha, which we celebrate their presence. And today is the last day to sign up for the retreat. That's next Saturday, February 4th, here at the church. You can sign up in the social hall. And the following Sunday, the 12th, we're having our church-wide potluck after the service. And on that day, there'll also be a workshop for families on bringing UU values into the home. So if you'd like to sign up for that, that's in the social hall as well. And I invite you to greet those sitting around you. Or sit those greeting around you. Morning. Good morning. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Encourage you to sign the guest ledger in the foyer, and there's a variety of information available out there on Unitarian Universalism, so help yourself to any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if anyone would have any questions or care to discuss either the service or our church. And if you're interested in becoming a member, we could meet in the Reverend's office and explain some of those details. If you're visiting with your children, it's our custom for the children to remain with us and tell the story for all ages, at which time they'll go to their religious education classes. You are welcome to join your child in these classes, and your child is also welcome to remain in the service. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the hall, and if there's any need for younger child care during the service. Classes end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your child from their classes. We also enjoy getting to know our guests, so if any members have brought guests today, and we'd be pleased if you'd introduce them, or if you brought yourself, you could introduce yourself. Welcome. Welcome. Everyone's invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. It'd be nice if you'd put your cell phones on silence mode at this time. And I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is the Reverend Linda Hansen. She's the third-year minister at the United Unitarian Universalist Society of Maguanago. She previously was a minister at the People's Church UU in Cedar Rapids and the UU Congregation of Danbury, Connecticut. Before that, she was a philosophy teacher at two Midwestern colleges, and she lives in the area with her sister, mother, and two cats. Thank you.
opening words are by Erica Hewitt. As we enter into worship, put away the pressures of the world that ask us to perform, to take up masks, to put on brave fronts. Silence the voices that ask you to be perfect. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love contained within these walls. You do not have to be braver, smarter, stronger, better than you are in this moment to belong here with us. You only have to bring the gift of your body, however able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, your animal heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love to this hour together. Let us worship together. And now I invite you to join in the congregational response, which is included in your order of service, and we'll sing together. Now would you join in our opening hymn? It's number 300, With Heart and Mind. And please stand if you're comfortable doing so. Just get the knots out of this. I invite the children to come forward and we'll do a story. Let's see if I can get this on. There we go. And I'll find my story here. Okay.
Now, what I need your help with, I have this on my Okay. Does that sound right? Okay. I don't have pictures for this story, so what I need your help with is acting it out. Do you think you can help me do that? Okay. So that means you're going to have to stand up, if you're willing, and act it out for everyone else. Okay? All right. This is a story from the Cherokee tradition, and it starts this way. An elderly Cherokee Native American was teaching his grandchildren about life. And he said to them, okay, you want to be the, all right, you can be the elderly, great. This is going to be good, I knew it. And he said to them, a fight is going on inside of me, and it's a terrible fight between two wolves. So what we need is one group of you to be one wolf and one group to be the other wolf, okay? So how about we'll kind of split this down the middle. So how about you go on this side and you stay on this side, okay? All right. You get to be... It looks like you want to be the bad wolf. Okay, that's kind of what I figured. Okay. One wolf is bad. So now here's where you have to act out. I'm going to read what this wolf looks like, and you sort of show everybody, okay, what this wolf is like. He is fear. Come on now, let's see. Anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, competition, superiority, and ego. Okay, can you show? Come on, we can do this, can't we? What does superiority look like? Come on, it's like I'm better than you, right? And false pride. And hatred. Fear. I think you're doing great. Yeah. Oh, and Stacy back there is doing terrific. Okay. Okay, so that's one side. All right. Now the other side, this is you, is good. Okay? He is joy, peace, love, hope, sharing, serenity, humility. Well, humility would be sort of, you know, like maybe meekness, you know, not being show-offy. Kindness, that would be sort of like giving, you know, to others. Benevolence, friendship, how would you show friendship? Maybe, you know, reaching out your hand to someone else to be friends. Empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Okay, then, here you are again. Then the elderly wise person says to his grandchildren, the same fight is going on inside every one of you and all of the people out there. Okay. So all of you are thinking about this. So remember, what he's saying is every one of us has each wolf inside of us. And so one of you asks the elderly wise person, which wolf will win? In other words, if I've got both these wolves inside of me, which wolf is going to win? The bad one or the good one? And what do you suppose the old Cherokee finally says? Any ideas? Whichever one you let win, that's a good answer. There's a little more to it. How do you let win? How you act, right? Right? Which one you want, right? You want to read the answer?
The one you feed.
The one you feed. So it really does tie into how you act. That's right. It's the one you kind of give into. Does that make sense to you, the one you feed? It is the way you act. It's the one you give into, the one you take care of. So if you act like these wolves acted, if you give in to your anger and your hate and so on, if you feed it, that's the wolf that will win. But if you, right, if you give in to your kindness and your joyfulness and so on, that wolf will win. That's a pretty good story, don't you think? That's kind of what our sermon is about. Okay? Thanks so much. Now, I understand that one of you is going to pick up the lantern.
Two of
you, okay. And lead everybody else to RE. Thank you so much. Bye. Thank you.
It's the special time in our service when we share our deepest joys and greatest concerns with each other in spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, please raise your hand. The usher will bring you a microphone. Please state your first name and then tell us the joy or concern that you'd like to share. I'll light a candle to represent that joy or concern so that the rest of us can hold it in our thoughts and prayers for you. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys be multiplied. I will light the memorial candle to symbolize the light that we each have in our hearts, that we share with each other, and that lessens the sorrow and increases the joy.
I'm Sheila, and I have a joy that today Karen Haskell, Michelle Hoyt, and I, we have a little group called Armonia, and my father, who's 91 and on a nursing home floor in a community, said recently, "I'd love to hear you sing." So we're going in today to sing for my father.
I'm Stacy, and I'd like a candle of concern for my friend Joe, who's having his kidney removed tomorrow.
I'm Susan, and this Friday I close on a purchase of a doggy daycare. 50 dogs, 12 employees.
Oh, hey, I have the mic. I'm Angel, and a joy for Sammy. She started two more college courses this week, and she's just doing amazingly well, and I'm very proud of her, and she's these classes have really developed her confidence as well, so she's just doing great. I haven't shared about how she's doing in a while, and I just thought I'd share that. Thanks.
I'm Alan, and just wanted to mention our nephew, Jason, is going in for an emergency appendectomy this morning, so he's in our thoughts.
I'm Marie,
thing, and I'd just like you to have him be in your thoughts. Thank you.
Martin, my name is Jim, and I'd like you to light a candle of concern for our member Ray, who has been fighting a flu for over a month now and has developed kidney stones and spent Friday in the hospital. So let's wish him a quick recovery.
My name is Esther. I'm sitting back here. I don't usually sit back here, but I came in late today because I forgot the money for my coffee and stuff. I had to go back home. Anyway, please light a candle of joy. Jerry and I, on Monday, January 23rd, celebrated our 45 years together being married.
I'm Eric, a candle of joy for the beautiful sunny day and the nice blanket of snow we got last night, and a reminder to those that signed up for our silent auction item today at Lapham Peak after church. We're going to gather, and if you signed up, I hope you will come for our winter day. If you didn't sign up, you're welcome to come also. I think there's going to be plenty to do, and we may ask you to make a little contribution to the church, but please come.
And I'll light our last candle for the joys and concerns we keep in our hearts. Now I invite you into a time of silent meditation. Let us open our minds and hearts to the place of quiet, to the silent prayer for the healing of pain and the soft, gentle coming of love. I'd like to invite Paul Fackler up to speak a few words for us.
I guess this is my testimonial on why I'm here at LCUUC. So hello, my name is Paul Fackler. I'm left-handed, nearsighted, and unable to whistle. My father is a Lutheran, Anglican, Catholic minister. My mother is a nurse. I have seven brothers. I am married to Barbara Howell. I have one daughter, Alexandra Morgan, and I take care of computer systems as a job. Now I'd like everyone to stand up for a moment, so rise as you are able. Okay. And now raise your hands over your head, palms up. Okay? Now take your hands, shake them. Come on, with feeling. All right. Okay, everybody can sit down. Thank you. So what you have just done is commonly known as jazz hands. It's a dance move. Or in the current vernacular of the Occupy Wall Street movement, jazz hands are used as a way to silently applaud someone. So, thank you. And although you may find that interesting, what you are probably asking yourself right now is, why did we do that? And the answer is very simple. I asked you to, and you were willing. I'm an ardent intellectual. I love to think. I love to read books. In 1979, when I was about 14, I read Robert Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land. And I believe at the time that I grokked it. In 2002 or so, I read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. And when I got done with it, I thought, this is the same book as Stranger in a Strange Land. It would be interesting to compare the two books and write a paper. In 2011, some person on the internet posted a review of Atlas Shrugged and wrote, Atlas Shrugged lacks much of the richness of modern life. An interesting comparison is Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land. So apparently, there are kindred spirits out there who have read both of the same books and think comparing them would be interesting. And I'm wondering if that person's left-handed, nearsighted, and unable to whistle. But what does this have to do with my joining LCUUC? As a social thinking creature, we seek community, other kindred spirits. The internet by itself is no more a community than a library. What makes a community is a living conversation, a willingness to talk and share ourselves that moves beyond the simple presentation of words and language to doing something. We need the other, someone who is not ourselves, to pull us up out of complacency and stasis, to ask us to stand up and do jazz hands, or to think about something. LCUUC values thinking, not as an empty intellectualism, which spends its time calculating the number of angels that can dance on the head of a pin, internet says it's an infinite number, but one that says, here is the world, what should we do in it? In The Life of the Mind, a book that a group of us led by Gus Santo just finished reading, philosopher Hannah Arendt writes, although thinking can never directly change reality, the principles by which we act and the criteria by which we judge and conduct our lives depend ultimately on the life of the mind. LCUUC is a community that stimulates the life of the mind, and it welcomes us not because we have read the same books or like the same things or even agree on things, but because we are other, capable of independent thought, and at the same time, capable of working together. And how do I know this? Because we just did jazz hands together. Or more simply, free of any intellectualism or belief structures, at every service we say, greet those around you. And we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I invite you to join me in singing hymn number 55, The Dark of Winter.
Thank you.
reading today is in two parts, and together they make up the story called The Rabbi's Gift, as told by William H. Hoff. Here is part one. Long ago, there was a monastery verging on collapse. The buildings were falling down. The gardens had grown up in weeds. The animals had died or wandered away, and there were only a few monks left in the place. And this was all very sad, because at one time, the monastery had been alive and vigorous with many monks who did a lot of good deeds. The monastery was specially important to the people of the area because of the hope that it gave them. No matter how hard times got for the people, the monks would cheer them up by promising that sooner or later a Messiah, a great spiritual leader, would come and help straighten things out. But the Messiah did not come. As a matter of fact, instead of getting better, things got worse. The ruler of the land was cruel, food was scarce, and the people were very discouraged. Matters were as difficult in the monastery as they were among people in general. Finally, there were only 5 monks left, including the abbot. In the woods near the monastery, there was a little hut that the rabbi in the village occasionally used as a retreat. The monks had gotten so that they could sense when the rabbi was in the hut. They would go about saying, "I think the rabbi's in the woods." "Yes, I'm sure the rabbi's in the woods." One day, as the monks were talking about the hard times that had come to their monastery and wondering what to do, it occurred to the abbot that perhaps the rabbi might have some helpful advice. So the next time there was the feeling that the rabbi was in the woods, the abbot took up his walking staff and went to the hut. And sure enough, the rabbi was there, and he welcomed the abbot warmly. And when the abbot told him the sad story of how bad things had gotten at the monastery, the rabbi could only nod in agreement. "Yes, I know," said the rabbi. "The times are bad for people everywhere, and the people are desperate. Everyone is hopeless. Even the synagogue is nearly empty on the Sabbath." At that, the abbot and that rabbi began to weep together. Then they read from the Torah and spoke quietly of deep matters, trying to comfort each other. The time came for the abbot to return to the monastery, and the two embraced at the door. And as he was about to walk away, the abbot turned and spoke. "It has been very good to be with you here, but I have failed in my expectation that you would have some words of wisdom. Is there nothing you can tell me to save the monastery? No advice?" "No, I am sorry," answered the rabbi. "I have no words of wisdom. The only thing I can say is that the Messiah is one of you."
"I have no words of wisdom," said the rabbi to the abbot who had come to him for help. "The only thing I can say is that the Messiah is one of you." Perhaps you, like me, can identify with the monks of this struggling monastery. Their one hope was the promise that sooner or later a Messiah, a great spiritual leader, would come and help straighten things out. That is, their one hope was that someone from outside their community would save them from the mess into which they had gotten themselves. How often have I hoped for just such a Messiah? And doesn't our culture encourage such fantasies? Think how often such saviors appear in our fairy tales and myths. A knight in shining armor, a fairy godmother, a prince charming, a good witch of the north, a Shane of the old west. Or think how many of us buy tickets to the lottery. The monks and I are not alone in hoping for an unlikely rescue. The story we've heard doesn't identify what kind of monastery this is, but I would like to think these monks are Christian. You see, if the monks are Christian, then supposedly they've already had their Messiah. Christianity is built upon the belief that Jesus of Nazareth, who lived 2 millennia ago, was and is the Savior of humankind. This is why the title of Christ was given to Jesus. The word Messiah, which means the Anointed One, comes from a Hebrew word which, when translated into Greek, becomes the word Christos. To call Jesus Christ is to call him Savior. So if these monks are Christian, the story suggests that one Messiah wasn't quite enough for them. Whatever saving message they should have received from Jesus didn't quite take. They looked for someone else to save them all over again. And I, too, am always on the lookout for one more saving message that will make sense of my life and give me clear direction. I still remember the excitement I felt in a bookstore at coming across yet one more book that looked like it might contain the key to the meaning of my life. And I remember my chagrin when reading Beyond the Jacket, I realized I'd already read this book. I laughed at myself as I put the book back on the bookstore shelf and began to understand that it wasn't the book that failed, but that I was looking for the wrong thing and in the wrong place. So we must ask what it means to be saved and where we are to look for salvation. So here is part two of the Rabbi's Gift.
When the abbot returned to the monastery, the other monks rushed up to discover what he had learned from the rabbi. But the abbot shook his head. "He couldn't help," said the abbot. "All we did was weep together and read the Torah. The one thing he did say, and I don't understand what he meant, was that the Messiah is one of us." In the days that followed, the monks thought about the strange statement and wondered about it. How could it be possible that the Messiah might be one of us? We are the sorriest of creatures. Could the rabbi have meant that the abbot is a great leader and just doesn't know it? He has been our leader for a very long time. On the other hand, he might have meant Brother Timothy. After all, Brother Timothy is a man of great spiritual insight. Surely he didn't mean Brother Thomas. He's simply too quiet, even though he is the one who's there when you need him. And it can't be Brother Joseph. He's too grumpy, although he is usually right. And that leaves only me. And I know I'm not the Messiah. After all, I'm just an ordinary fellow with no special talents. But suppose he did mean me. Suppose I am the Messiah. Oh, gee, I hope not. I don't have what it takes. Yet all of the monks continued to think in this matter. And as they did, they began to treat each other differently, as though one of them might be the Messiah, deserving of great respect and assistance. And as they treated each other like they may be the Messiah, they began to feel better about themselves. Then one day, some of the villagers went to the monastery to pray in the chapel. And they were surprised how different the chapel felt. They noticed, too, that the monks seemed to have a special regard for each other. The monastery had become a very spiritual place to be. and so they went back to the village and told their neighbors. Soon the villagers were coming to the monastery to help repair the buildings and tend the garden, and one of them brought a goat and another a couple of chickens. One of the villagers even asked if he might join the monastery, and then another, and then another. And before long, the monastery was thriving. It became a center of hope and spiritual vitality. And it was not long before this that goodwill and optimism had spread out to include the entire village. Even the rabbi was happier as his people began coming back to the synagogue on the Sabbath. It never occurred to him that their gift of respect and hope that he had given the abbot had returned to include him as well. The Messiah is one of you. The rabbi shakes these monks up by telling them to look for their Messiah among themselves rather than outside their community. A true Savior comes not from the outside, but from within one's own community, within one's own daily, ordinary life. And the monks discover, without quite realizing it, that the rabbi's message is saying even more. Who is the Messiah? Not one of them, but all of them. United Church of Christ minister Melanie Morrison suggests that this, in fact, was just the saving message of Jesus. She reflects on the story of the two disciples of Jesus who walked to Emmaus a few days after Jesus' death on the cross. The two disciples, like so many other followers of Jesus, had thought that Jesus was the Messiah who would save the Jews from their oppression under the Romans. But now Jesus was not only dead, but had been put to death in a horrible and humiliating way. And now she writes, life in Jerusalem and the countryside went on as though it hadn't made one particle of difference that Jesus had been there at all. As they walk, a stranger joins them, a stranger who doesn't seem to know what's been going on. The two disciples pour out their story and their despair, and the stranger responds by helping them to understand that these days, which weigh so heavy and seem so final, are not the last word. When they arrive in Emmaus, the two friends invite the stranger to join them in a meal. As they break bread together, they realize that this stranger is Jesus. Morrison interprets the story in this way. The problem, she says, is that we want the extraordinary signs and wonders that assure us of God's presence. Or when we do recognize the holy in the ordinary, we seek to capture and enshrine it as certainty. But he always eludes our grasp. As soon as their eyes were opened and they recognized Jesus, he vanished from their sight, and they were left with their meal together. That is what he had given them all along, although they hadn't the eyes to see it. They had one another all along. He gave them back the ordinary when they wanted the extraordinary. This, I think, is just the gift of the rabbi to the monks in the monastery. They wanted the extraordinary signs and wonders that they associated with a Messiah. But what the rabbi gave the monks was what they had all along, although they hadn't the eyes to see it. They had one another all along. The extraordinary Messiah for whom they looked outside themselves was there all along among the very ordinary monks themselves. The rabbi's gift was to help them open their eyes to see it. In our Unitarian Universalist tradition, it was perhaps Ralph Waldo Emerson who most helped us to look to the ordinary world and to ourselves for salvation.
a former Unitarian minister himself, he urged the 1838 graduates of Harvard Divinity School to reinterpret the saving message of Jesus. One man, he said, was true to what is in you and me. He saw that God incarnates himself in man and evermore goes forth anew to take possession of his world. He said in this jubilee of sublime emotion, I am divine. Through me, God acts. Through me, acts, speaks. Would you see God, see me, or see thee when thou also thinkest as I now think? But what a distortion did his doctrine and memory suffer in the same, in the next, and the following ages. For Emerson, Jesus was not uniquely divine, not a savior sent to us from heaven, but a prophet who tried to open our eyes to the spark of divinity that lies within each one of us. I think Emerson would have liked the story of the rabbi's gift. These monks didn't need a Messiah sent from heaven. They needed to open their eyes to the wonder of their fellow monks and the wonder within their own selves. This is what our first UU principle asks us to do, to open our eyes to the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Not an easy task. Sometimes when people challenge this principle, they do so by citing examples of extraordinary evil in human beings. What does it mean to talk about the inherent worth and dignity of Adolf Hitler, for example? I struggle with how to answer that. In one way, it would be a harder sermon to write. But in another way, it might be easier because the examples would be removed from what is the daily, ordinary experience of most of us. Most of us don't worry day to day how to see and respect the inherent worth and dignity of people like Hitler. Our troubles are more likely to come from within our own communities. How do we see and respect the inherent worth and dignity of a meddlesome member of our extended family, for example? Or a competitive or unproductive colleague at work, or a member of our congregation who insists on seeing things differently from us. Like the monks, we miss the spark of divinity that's in the people right around us. Brother Thomas is too quiet, and Brother Joseph is too grumpy, and the abbot long ago exhausted all he had to teach us. Maybe looking for the inherent worth and dignity of every person is no more than a Pollyannish ideal. Maybe not everyone has that potential that we piously proclaim in our principles. But on the other hand, maybe we would be surprised if we could see beyond our usual barriers. I used to be disturbed by the story of the Last Judgment as told in the Gospel of Matthew. As the story goes, Jesus tells those who are saved that I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. And when these people ask with surprise when it was that they fed or clothed or visited Jesus, he responds, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Now, I was disturbed by the story because I assumed that Jesus meant we were supposed to see his face or God's face in the people with whom we connect rather than their own faces, as if they were valuable not in their own right, but because Jesus or God loved them. But what if Jesus meant what Emerson suggests he did? Then the story asks not that we substitute God's face for the face of the person in front of us, but that we recognize that each person's face is, in its own unique way, one of the faces of God. Each person is uniquely of value. Seen through open eyes, each person has a saving message. UU minister Robert Walsh tells the story of being asked, as ministers often are, to officiate at the memorial service of someone he did not know, in this case, a man named Melvin. As you know, the centerpiece of most UU memorial services is a celebration of the life of the person who died. But as Walsh talked first to Melvin's cousin and then to a man who had worked with Melvin, it seemed there was little to celebrate in Melvin's life. "I don't know what you could say," the co-worker admitted. "There probably won't be many people there." So Walsh simplified his usual remarks, not wanting to make Melvin out to be someone he wasn't. Just as he was about to begin the service with no more than a dozen people in attendance, three more people arrived. All three wept through the service. It turned out these were the people with whom Melvin had most recently lived. Because Melvin's cousin hadn't thought much of Melvin, he assumed this family didn't either, and he had not asked this family to get in touch with the minister before the service. But in fact, this family had loved Melvin. Melvin had helped to care for them, and when he was dying, they helped to care for him, and now they mourned Melvin's loss. Walsh writes that none of the people knew about the words "I did not say." Several of them thanked me for the service, and I believe all of them were satisfied with it. But I was not satisfied. I was taken by surprise. I had prepared myself to meet indifference, but love showed up instead. I am going to try never again to assume that any person is not loved. I am going to try to prepare for love. I love that line. I am going to try to prepare for love. This is what our statement of principles and purposes asks us to do. The statement does not ask us to believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, as if that were an obvious fact, but rather to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The rabbi didn't ask the monks to believe that the Messiah was among them. Rather, he suggested that they act as if the Messiah were among them. It was the monks who made that possibility come true. By acting as if any one of them could be the Messiah, they all turned into messiahs for one another. By acting as if each of us has inherent worth and value, we help make that possibility come true. And in the process, we may come to discover the Messiah, not just in other people, but in ourselves as well. Sometimes it's even more difficult to see our own inherent worth and dignity than to see someone else's. Sometimes we close our vision to the best in other people because we fear we will be inadequate by comparison. But ironically, looking for the best in others tends to bring out the very best in ourselves. The rabbi who told the monks to look for the Messiah among themselves eventually found his own synagogue filling up with people. It never occurred to him, the story says, that the gift of respect and hope he had given the abbot had returned to include him too. The Messiah is one of you. It isn't Jesus or the right book or a knight in shining armor or some as yet unknown savior from the outside who brings salvation. And salvation isn't a magical freedom from oppression or a magical sense of meaning and clarity in our individual lives. Salvation is our willingness to entertain the possibility that each of us, including ourselves, has inherent worth and dignity, and the willingness to act as if the possibility were true day after day after day. Salvation is the willingness to give other people and ourselves another chance when we fail to find the dignity in others or ourselves. Salvation is knowing that no one of us has everything the world needs, but that each of us has something to contribute. Salvation is the loving community we have it within ourselves to create. The Messiah is all of us. So may it be. And now I think we have a few minutes time for some discussion, if you'd like to offer comments of your own. And I think the ushers have microphones that they'll bring to you, so if you just raise your hand.
Hi, my name is Helen. I appreciate your timely delivery of the message. I'm able to do a lot of volunteer work in the area and with scouts and schools and things like that. But I think that's what, you know, sometimes us volunteers need that training to know that when they turn into wolves, that it isn't, you know, to take it not so personally. I think sometimes when you do volunteer work, you take it personally. So I appreciate your message, because especially to the kids, because as they see us doing volunteer work, they might get the same kind of experience of wolves at the door and be able to understand that story to help them to continue to volunteer.
Thank you. That's just a lovely connection. I appreciate that.
I'm Jerry, and I appreciate your talk about the Messiah. And I'm just thinking that we, with the way things are today, I think we need another Messiah. I mean, our country has been uniquely gifted, I think, in the world in its brief existence that we've had a few. We've had the founding fathers that put together the Constitution and led us through some almost hopeless times at the time. We had Lincoln that led us through a time when the country was being destroyed. We had Teddy Roosevelt and fighting Bob La Follette that wrested power away from the very few rich and gave it to the people back around the turn of the previous century. We had Franklin Roosevelt, who led his country through the threat of both fascism and communism. And right now, I think as I watch the political scene, I see politicians falling over all over one another to pledge fealty to the religious right, who are falling over themselves to take the rights away from us who don't believe as they do. So we do need a Messiah.
I can understand your wish for one.
Thank you.
I feel that was very timely, especially on a personal level. Yesterday, Samantha and I were discussing how we should kind of curb our, you know, any self-deprecating comments in front of the younger ones in order to make them feel less inclined to do the same to themselves. And you gave me a couple of lines that I am actually going to write on the bathroom mirror with a marker. For them to read every day, and something I can talk to them about in a different way than I would have, about their own divinity and their own self-worth and dignity, which I see that they really don't have, as especially one of them, you know, you say the slightest thing and she will bawl for hours and hours, just the slightest comment about her hair or anything. or they're twins. Well, that one's pretty, but you're eh, and she bawled all night long. Someone said that to her. They're identical, you know. So I don't understand it, but they really need to hear some of this, and I'm going to write it on the mirror. So thank you very much.
Glad it was helpful. Does anyone want to respond to Jerry's concern? I think a lot of us can identify with.
I will respond to that one. My name is Kat. But before I respond to that one, Emerson and I think alike, because coming from Japanese background, the Shinto believes that we have a word God, but that word God is not creator God, mm-hmm. but it is the spirit God. So we have many gods. So that spirit dwells within. So that's kind of pretty much the divineness that you
yes.
talk about.
Yes.
In Buddha's compass, because our Japanese are dual religion, Buddha and Shinto. So we attend both places. We go to temple. When we think about our past relatives, and we go to Shinto shrine when we think about happy things that are going on life now, like a wedding, we go to Shinto shrine to get married. So Buddha, on the other hand, Buddhism really don't talk about God, quote, but it talks about enlightenment. You enlighten to the truth, whatever that is. So enlightened being. So, you know, wake up to your divinity. As for what Jerry said, if we could just enlighten ourselves that we have one vote, and every single citizen of the United States cast that one important vote, we will change this society. But unfortunately, what's the percentage of people who vote? I mean, I think if we can just wake up to power we have it in that one, casting that vote, I think we change it.
Thank you.
I'm Greg, and I'll respond a little bit more to Jerry because I'm sympathetic with the desire to be rescued. I miss Santa. I miss my dad. I miss the Father God. I miss them all. But ultimately, I think the responsible choice is to recognize, particularly in a democracy, as most of us know, the word demos means people, that I'd much rather be rescued by a savior, but ultimately to say that it's us, that
yeah.
we share responsibility. And a lot of us look to Obama to be a source of help, but he is just like us, one guy doing his job, and Lynn's got her job, and I got my job, and if we all do our jobs, including as voters, then we can save each other. But if we wait for a single person to do it, I think we will always be waiting like the monks. So I appreciate your sermon a lot. I thought it was a wonderful message.
Thank you, and you expressed that very well, I think. Thank you. We should probably move on. I don't want to. So, thank you so much. Really, really good conversation.
So, this is the time in our service where we collect the offertory to support our church. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us. A community of action, hope, for we are now the facilitators of the dream.
please join me in the Congregational Affirmation 576, a litany of restoration. If, recognizing the interdependence of all life, we strive to build community, the strength we gather will be our salvation. If you are black and I am white, if you are female and I am male, if you are older and I am younger, if you are progressive and I am conservative, if you are straight and I am gay, if you are Christian and I am Jewish, if we join spirit as brother and sisters, the pain of our aloneness will be lessened, and that does matter. Our closing hymn is number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Please stand as you're willing and able.
Our benediction is by James Vila Blake. Love is the spirit of this church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Thank you.